Hey, it's Coin Talk. Okay, here's what this week's show is. A couple weeks ago, we did a show about XRP fans, and Jay brought out the flaming hot take that perhaps they were bots. This did not make the non-bot XRP fans happy. We heard from them. We heard that we were discriminating against them. And this being an equal opportunity show, we wanted to have someone from that community on to tell their side of the story and tell us how a cryptocurrency that is primarily intended to innovate international bank transfers has gathered such a passionate and contentious audience. So I talked to like several different fans of theirs on Twitter, ended up setting an interview up with the one who seemed the most reasonable and had the availability, which clicked with my schedule the best. That's really interesting and fun. Whether you love or hate Ripple, or you're just trying to understand what's going on, it's the third biggest coin by market cap. Their fans are out there on Twitter, ready to argue with you. I think this is kind of a unique conversation. Jay and I also talked about Bitcointopia and whether we would want to live there. Great episode coming for you. It's brought to you in partnership with Medium. You can find great writing about crypto at me.dm/crypto. That is their crypto landing page. You can get in touch with us, hi@cointalk.show. Here is the show.
This episode of Coin Talk was taped Tuesday, May 22nd at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The Bitcoin price index was $8,214.
All right, ready?
Mm-hmm.
Coin Talk, Aaron, we're back in the crypto cave.
I liked your throw there.
Thank you. Thank you. I've been working on it. I didn't know whether to go for like the gravelly serious NPR, you know, like welcome to Coin Talk, or to just yell, but I think yelling is better.
I like you in more of like a Mike Francesa mode, just kind of like gravelly, like 1.5 speed, just rocking.
Oh, okay. So like, the Bitcoin buckets not doing too good this day.
Ripple's in the goddamn toilet.
That's Joe Pesci. That is not Mike Francesa. I don't know how much you, Mike Francesa is much more slower and full with a bunch of like, he does a lot of that. Every time he's searching for something, he goes, let me check to see Bitcoin looks 8,600, not bad. Ripple at $1.14. Anyway.
I feel like we never talk about the price of Bitcoin on the show anymore.
I know. It's actually kind of nice. Aaron.
Yes.
We have been talking a lot recently about Bitcoin projects that are utopian in scope.
Are there any other kind?
Well, yeah, so we have, there are ones that are like, here is a utility token to pay your dental bills, right?
Yeah.
But I think that since we're not talking so much about the price, we've been talking a lot more about the more fun parts about crypto.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Last episode, we talked about, what was it called? Jax Land or something like that?
Decentral Unity.
Decentral Unity, which is a Jax-based utopia that is trying to solve the...
It's not really a utopia. It's more of like a like what are those like lines of products that people sell at parties at people's houses?
Avon.
It's like Jack's this, Jack's that, Jack's prepaid card, Jack's Academy,
but
Jack's
somehow,
Magic the Gathering.
But somehow Jack's will solve the problems
right,
of the world.
Yeah. Somehow through this line of products that is going to solve the warring tribal factionalism.
So a couple days ago, our friend Niraj sent a message to us in the group chat that we're in, and it was of a yurt in what looked like almost like the Mars landscape or something like that. It was a very desert landscape, and we couldn't tell what it was about, but it was a Twitter account called Bitcointopia, and they said the first Bitcointopia domicile is up. Did you see this?
I glanced at it. I admit I did not go much deeper into
it. So I looked a little bit into what Bitcointopia is, and I have no idea if this is real or not, but it seems somewhat real.
Yes.
In that, like, it might be 3% real.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Yeah, it is really a lot. So what it is that it is hundreds of thousands of acres, 500,000 acres to be exact, in the middle of nowhere in Nevada, where like I think probably the government actually
literally before you even said that, I was like, he's gonna either say Florida or Nevada.
It's a swamp in Florida.
I got a great deal on 500,000 acres of prime Everglades swampland.
So this thing, as far as I can tell, is he is trying to build a society based on Bitcoin that is a utopia.
Yeah.
Hence the term Bitcointopia. Now, yeah. I don't know how familiar you are with like biosphere type projects or OTECs. Do you know what an OTEC is?
I mean, I'm familiar with the Pauly Shore vehicle.
Okay, so like an OTEC is like an old idea from the 80s, which is that, I think it's earlier than that, is that mankind will one day destroy the Earth and they'll have to live on these floating pods that somehow can like propagate one another. Like two OTECs can make another OTEC. And everybody eats spirulina. So it seems kind of like that. It also had a sort of wild country vibe where people are trying to build an actual society.
This is kind of in the same cinematic universe as our spec scripts of people traveling through post-apocalyptic Europe to get to Zappo.
To build Bitcoin
Topia. To turn the Bitcoin faucet back on and bloom the desert with sweet Bitcoin.
Yeah, I have actually been thinking about that movie for a while. And I was like, because we have one big problem, which is there's no reason in a post-apocalyptic world why you would need Bitcoin. Unless Bitcoin created the actual logic that you can build any type of utopia.
People become savages warring factional tribes without the decentral currency to unite them all.
Oh.
So a savior has to come and get the Bitcoin going again so people can organize themselves rationally and not fall into, I mean, you know, the kind of thing we're falling into right now.
So it would be like Mad Max, basically.
Yes.
And
yes.
That one tribe has decided that the only way to unite the tribes is to get the beautiful like logic of Bitcoin, which is all buried in the Zappo.
Yeah, it's kind of like the war. Isn't Warriors kind of like that? Like they're going to unite all the gangs at the beginning.
I've never seen that movie.
Really?
Yeah, never.
It's a great movie.
Every time someone makes like a Warriors.
I'm shocked that you haven't seen it because Viceland, no shade on Viceland since they are this employer, both you and my wife. But you may notice they don't have that many shows. So they play the movie The Warriors, I would say 17 times a week.
It's like Wings when we were children, remember? Wings would always be on.
For me, that was because I didn't have cable when I was a kid.
Me neither.
I only had UHF. They play The Streets of San Francisco all the time. That's like on the barrier. It's like Michael Douglas.
Oh, yeah. All right.
Basically, all my ideas about crime are like something that like a pimp did in a Streets of San Francisco episode in 1972.
So can I read to you what they say Bitcointopia is?
Yes.
Bitcointopia is an experiment in technology. They misspelled experiment. EXPIRAMENT. So we're on good footing here.
Yes.
Government and city development. To build an entire new kind of city in the natural and rural environment into an advanced technology hub built on AI, automation, Bitcoin, and machines is a large task to accomplish.
It's
not easy. Bitcointopia is leading the way by example on how humanity can build itself into the future by remembering yesterday and building tomorrow. A little vague.
Yeah.
The first thing you have to do is buy land with Bitcoin, pay for your home, or build it yourself. And then bring your business to the city full of Bitcoin users and blockchain citizens.
Kind of reminds me of Wild Wild Country.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I mean, the footage is like a yurt, you know, like in the middle of like a barren landscape before all the people in Wild Wild Country built like an intricate like irrigation.
I know, this
system.
Is like, I feel like this utopia is probably built on like the former site of a fireworks stand or something.
All right, Aaron, you are a Bitcoin maximalist now. Yes.
Yes.
As you have said many times on this show. Does this appeal to you at all? Because this is the end for you.
I mean, this unites several things that I like waste time on the internet with. Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Prefab desert housing and like earth ships and that kind of thing I'm into. Have you ever heard of that place, Arco Santi? It's like
no,
in Arizona.
What is that?
It's like a like experimental architecture commune. Religious kind of place.
Okay,
my friend Jesse went there for a while. I'll say this: Bitcointopia appeals to me. I find the desert steading more appealing than the seasteading.
Yeah, I agree.
There's something about the seasteading where I'm like, man, I gotta like live with all these like dudes who only want to talk about Bitcoin, and there's like no way to leave. This sounds like a horror comedy.
Yeah, no, that's terrible. At least in the desert, you can go walk off in one direction
like,
and die.
Would you like to live on a cruise ship with a bunch of people who are into overthrowing the government?
All right, so this you're a mild yes on this then.
I'm a tentative yes. I'd like to visit. I'd like to have a vacation home there.
Okay, all right. So here's some, they get a little bit deeper, right? So they tell you about what this is going to look like. Concrete grid, sidewalks, and roads. The city will get its shape from the concrete grids, the sidewalks, and the roads.
Obviously.
These lines in the sand will define the shape, skeleton, and the foundation of what Bitcoin-topia looks like. The first concrete foundations for homes and sidewalks.
This is like a little too detailed.
We'll bring Bitcoin-topia up from the sand. He's like, we're going to lay some concrete.
The houses will have foundations and roofs. If you need to start with like instructions for laying out the grid, I think governance is going to be a problem. I think there's going to be a lot of chefs in the kitchen. I'd like to see more of a like Last Man on Earth, the sitcom scenario, where these people move into an existing community. I also don't feel like, in my opinion, this could be contentious, but I don't feel like the Bitcoin maximalist community and aesthetics, architecture, and like enjoyable living really mix, you know? Like, I'm not sure we should be trying to like lay out like a place you have to live based on like Bitcoin principles.
So you're out now.
No, I'm in. I'm trying
You're
to.
You're out because they have concrete sidewalks.
I'm trying to like push their vision in a slightly more practical manner. Also,
well,
we really have
roads.
To make this a Nevada desert. Like, it's a place of death. Nothing lives there.
They have 500,000 acres.
Shouldn't
Where
this be in like
500,000
Aspen
acres
or something like that?
All right. So then they have a houses section, and basically, like what you're talking about, where you go on it, you could click on a different type of house that you want to build on there, and there's every type of style you want. So you get like, you know, a Cape Cod style. You can get a modern house, mid-century modern. Whatever you want. And you can put it on your plot of land.
Got it.
All right. So we have the grid and we have the houses, right?
Yeah.
City center and government. Now, this is the most important part. And I swear to God, this is the only thing that they have listed there. The city center will define and embody the spirit of Bitcoin-topia. Its design will embrace classical masonry, modern glass aesthetics, and a touch of the Wild West history found in Nevada. Can you imagine? I actually have a visual.
It seems like they're going to too many things at once.
What
Why
does
not
this
just
look
go
like?
All Wild West with it.
What does this look like? Classical masonry, modern class aesthetics, and a touch of the Wild West. The government will be designed to function on AI, automation, and Bitcoin blockchain.
AI government?
AI,
how could
automation
it possibly go wrong?
That's it. So Bitcoin-topia government is all AI.
I will say that I can understand why the government of Bitcoin-topia might have to run on AI, because being on the city council of a Bitcoin maximalist town sounds like a form of like exquisite torture.
Yeah, so basically this is actually embracing one of the ideals, I think, of the Austrian School of Economics and Bitcoin maximalism, which is that this is actually something that Roger Ver also ranted about. Remember when he was talking about how there shouldn't be votes and democracy is bad? It's the idea that there is no form of government that is correct, so why not just make it AI?
I feel like moving to Bitcoin-topia is like a weird intermediary step towards living on the moon.
Yeah.
Like, and if there's one thing that I think would like unite cryptocurrency fans, it would be like a plan to all go live on the moon together.
It's going to be a lot of dudes.
Well, it kind of reminds me of how, like, you know how people who are, like, who are really into, like, preserving themselves after death, like, cryptogenics people?
Yeah.
Cryogenics. Jay, I think I just invented a billion. I think I had a billion dollar tuck.
Let's ICO cryptogenics.
It's not a eugenics thing. You know how people are into that? It's, like, even before the technology exists, they're, like, well, freeze my body. Maybe it'll just, like, be backwards compatible when it like happens. I think some of these things like Bitcoin-topia or like booking tickets to the moon with Bitcoin, which is definitely coming, are like these weird like reverse lease mortgages on the future. And I think it's an interesting divide in cryptocurrency between people who are like, I want to be able to buy like a cup of coffee now with my Bitcoin.
No one says that,
but that's always like a fake reason why Bitcoin won't work. And then the other side of that coin is like, here, we're taking Bitcoin deposits now for houses on the moon. We don't know how to build them. We don't know that we ever will be able to build them. You're probably going to see no value in this other than like it will allow you to engage in the like most immersive fantasy of a Bitcoin maximalist future.
Okay, so let's say that Bitcointopia has 1,000 of the most intense Bitcoin maximalists there, yeah. Right?
Yeah.
What is the murder rate in Bitcointopia?
Well, I would assume there's going to be a lot of guns in Bitcointopia. Oh, yeah. And so I would expect there's going to be a lot of murder.
I feel like it's almost like a battle royale situation.
I also think that if it happened, what brought it down wouldn't be the Bitcoin, but the Bitcoiners. I think the Bitcoin element might like work and like maybe the economy might hum. Like I could kind of see like, you know how like sometimes isolated communes get really good at producing one thing and become viable businesses.
Yeah, like the Rajneeshis.
Yeah, the Rajneeshis. There's like one that makes hammocks, sure. I think. Yeah. So I could see that all working out. But what I expect will ultimately bring down Bitcointopia will be like the polygamy or the like rocket launchers or like some other form of anarchism.
The polygamy or the rocket launchers.
It will be people pushing against the idea of rules in some other way.
Oh, yeah. There'll
that
be no
do
rules.
Something. I do think people should have the humble audacity to like question money, but once you have like questioned and conquered money, if you don't stop, like the government will still stop you from doing something.
Well,
at
not
Bitcointopia.
Here, because the fucking government is AI.
Yeah, but it's still in America. That's why I'm kind of surprised they want to put Bitcointopia in America in
the first place. I am also surprised about that. You would think that they would do it in some country that has no governance or will not actually try to govern them.
The whole time I was reading Nick Belton's book about the Silk Road, and I literally asked Nick Belton about this who's on Longform Podcast. I was like, if Ross Ulbricht had run the Silk Road from some Caribbean nation with a very, very bad extradition record, he might not be in jail at this point. The dumb part of this was doing this from like a library in San Francisco.
Yeah, like at Glen Park.
Yeah. Because like all the things that had to conspire to catch him, he had to be caught with his laptop open by like American agent. Like it would have been like a big ask if he had been like living in like some Saint like,
Kitts.
Yeah. I mean, maybe it still happens, but putting Bitcointopia in America, you are eventually going to run into conflict with the laws of America. If it's not the Bitcoin,
it's
the
rocket launcher. I feel like you have extrapolated this far out. I feel like they have like a Heaven's Gate Jim Jones situation way before the government gets involved. I would say the murder
Jim
rate,
Jones was a government situation.
I would say that
they killed a congressman.
That is true. I would say I'm more saying that I think that the murder rate in Bitcointopia is somewhere close to 100%.
I got one more for you before we go to these Ripple interviews.
Okay.
I feel like we've been doing a lot of kind of lighthearted apocalyptic stuff on the show. I think it's what happens when we have sideways corn.
Yeah.
There's like no like gambling action to get on, so it just gets weird. But have you followed Jose Canseco's?
Oh, how could I not? Yes.
Forays into cryptocurrencies.
Yeah.
So Jose Canseco, I will give Jose Canseco the credit of saying, when he tweeted this, I didn't know if it was real. I don't think it's real.
I don't think it's real.
But it's as real as many things that are regarded as real. So he tweeted, "Canseco coin is launched. If you are a good ICO lawyer, please get a hold of me." If that's a joke, that's a pretty funny like roast on ICOs.
I actually think it was a joke.
Because that is basically how most ICOs conduct themselves.
Yeah. We've launched. However, I will say this, that I think it was a troll, and it was kind of a genius troll because everyone shared this thing, you know?
Okay, so he says, only Jose Canseco can issue crypto hugs, Canseco coins, and deliver e-hugs. One Canseco coin always equals one crypto hug. So it's basically like a stable coin for hugs.
Yeah.
There are a limited number of crypto hugs available and may run out at any time. Does a man shilling a fake cryptocurrency about electronic hugs strike you as a lonely person?
No, well, look, I think you and I could have easily made this exact same joke. So, if it is, it means that you and I, we actually would have made a worse version of this joke. So, Jose Canseco, I don't know. I mean, maybe if that means you and I are lonely, then yes.
Okay, so I wanted to go back because I remembered that he had been tweeting about Bitcoin before. I kind of wanted to trace the evolution of Jose Canseco's views on crypto through his Twitter over time, which meant that I had to read back through his entire Twitter history.
It's not, they're much worse Twitter
so,
accounts.
So, starting with the Bitcoin, he says, look at the simplest slot machine in Vegas. That is what Bitcoin is structured on. Bitcoin is mathematically structured, so a lot of people lose money and a small group will make a killing. Also, kind of right.
Yeah, I'm in. Everything he said about Bitcoin, I'm in on.
And then, okay, he went on a tear in November 2017. I think both of these prophecies have come true. In 2018, blockchain will become mainstream knowledge understood by moron level and above. Kind of happening. Yeah. It is the end of the beginning for cryptocurrency. Bitcoin at 10,000 by New Year's Eve.
True.
Almost to the day. This is what I'm saying. Yeah. So I would say at this point, I'm hearing all of the Canseco calls.
Way better. Do you remember all those people when we did the basement chit tapes who were like analysts at Goldman Sachs and stuff who would be like, I think Bitcoin will be at 8,000 by November of 2018. And you're like, what are you basing this on? I mean, they just needed to ask Jose Canseco, apparently.
Okay, so these are the other tweets that I found in the Jose Canseco history. Number one, T.S. Eliot always puts a big lump in my throat. Unexpected.
Why would T.S. Eliot do that?
Number two, play a round of golf with baseball legend Jose Canseco and football legend Jim McMahon. Available Thursday, Sunday. Call Morgan at phone number for information. So you can just call a guy if you're in Vegas and get a round of golf with Jose Canseco and Jim McMahon.
I would maybe pay for that.
How much, like, what is the maximum you would pay for that?
$500.
I kind of feel like it's probably about $500. Yeah, like if you're just putting your phone number straight onto Twitter, it's not more than $1,000.
Yeah, I would do $500.
Here are a couple more from the Jose Canseco archive. I wanted to thank Dave Cavall and the Athletics family for welcoming me last season, but unfortunately my contract will not be renewed due to tweets I posted, which I take full responsibility for.
that's a tweet that I am going to have to post at some point in the future.
A, Kang asked. B, I was like, which tweets?
Yes. That tweet really strikes close to home for me. I gotta say, Jose Canseco's Twitter feed, I think, is good.
I really enjoyed reading through it. It seems like his crypto calls have been like pretty dead on. It does say in his bio, media appearances, bookings, 818-903-5698. So I say we give him a call and see if he wants to come on Coin Talk.
I think that's his real number, too.
I think that's at least the number of someone who can get him on the show.
Let's get him on Coin
Talk. And if you can play a round of golf with him for like 500, I'm willing to do a paid placement. I'm willing to put a little of our like cold hard iron cash in. A paid conversation with Jose Canseco.
Yeah,
that's what
I'll
it takes.
I'll pay for it. We can pay him in Ripple.
Speaking of non-paid conversations, should we move on to my interview with a real live?
Yeah,
Ripple
I
want to
hear about this because you and I talked about this, which was that we didn't want to just bag on Ripple fans.
No, along with the more body angry Ripple bots, when we posted that episode about Ripple. We heard from real people who are like, I'm not a bot. I really like Ripple. Fuck you guys. Or they weren't like, fuck you guys.
They were nice about it.
They were like, we have a great community. We love this community. And we'd like to tell you like what the Ripple community is really like. And I think that's fair. Like, we're not here to bag on anyone.
Also, we could be wrong.
Well, part of this, I think, is our curiosity about the Ripple community and how this one project became to be viewed so differently than other projects.
Or even just stripped down. Like, what does it mean to be a fan of a coin, you know?
Yeah. So here's the interview. Welcome, Kieran.
Thank you for having me on.
So I just want to, like, situate this slightly for listeners. We did a show a week or two ago in which my co-host, Jay Kang, humorously, but with some meaning behind it, questioned whether Ripple fans on Twitter are real people or bots. I'll say we've never gotten as much response as we got to that show. Like, usually it's like a trickle of Twitter and emails, like instantly bombarded with interest from that show. So some people felt like we were piling on the anti-Ripple sentiment of the internet. Other people were like, yeah, fuck those guys. And there was a third camp of people like you who were like, actually, there's like a interesting community here and you should look more into it. So I can tell right from when you tweeted at me that you're interested in Ripple because it's in your Twitter bio. So tell me, like, what makes you want to have Ripple in your Twitter bio and sort of make it part of your persona in that way?
Well, I suppose it started quite a few years ago. A friend of mine introduced me to Bitcoin.
Hmm.
I did my research, and it sort of, I think with everybody, it sort of sounded a bit like magic money.
Where are we in the history of Bitcoin right now? Like, approximately what price are we talking about when you're hearing about
actually,
it?
Actually, to be honest when I was first told about it, it was about 6 or 7 years ago.
No wonder you're calling from the Bahamas.
Yeah, quite right. But for me, it really sort of came down to a couple of things, actually. I mean, I come from a more traditional investment background, so I was quite pragmatic about my approach.
Yeah.
I had a couple of problems with Bitcoin, or, you know, what it maybe stood for, which was, at that time, I think it was really sort of anti-government, anti-bank.
Anarchist.
So that was really one of my first problems with it. And then second to that, and I mean no disrespect when I say this, I also couldn't quite get my head around the legendary Satoshi story, which was a he, she, or a group, but nobody knew who they were. And maybe that's my ignorance, or maybe that's just something that was completely different to me, but I just couldn't buy into that either. So I really, really struggled on those two aspects, which led me into Ripple. You know, I had this company in front of me with a fantastic team. You know, I looked into the investors. Google Ventures being one of them was a big factor. And then I did further research, finding David Schwartz on YouTube. And I thought, well, this guy has a far bigger brain than me. And, you know, then obviously onto the technicals.
And David Schwartz, for people listening, is on Twitter at Joel Katz. And that was the person, actually, the story that kicked off us talking about this was Laura Shin's podcast, in which the CEO, Brad Carlinghaus, didn't want to go on. And David Schwartz, a.k.a. at Joel Katz, offered to go instead. And Joel Katz is kind of the technical godfather of Ripple.
He is. He is the chief cryptographer. And you know, I'm in awe of people like David. And, you know, I did actually also want to apologize that you didn't get the CEO, because I know that was a massive thing. And I also wanted to say that obviously I'm not a bot. But,
you can confirm that you are not a bot.
I can confirm I am not a bot.
Yeah.
But, you know, it sort of led me into, okay, what is Ripple? It's a company. Who are they? Who are they backed by? I really liked the team. I mean, it seemed to me that it was sort of best-in-class team. The backers seemed fantastic with Google Ventures, SBI, etc. And then I sort of looked at it and went, okay, so what do they do? What is Ripple? What is XRP? I'm not that technical, but as somebody who wanted to get into cryptocurrency, it made sense to me. I looked at it as a use case and I thought, okay, that sounds good. And anyone that has sent a cross-border wire transfer like I have, either weekly or almost daily sometimes, it's really frustrating. So it made sense to me. You know, use case, enterprise use case, settlements in 3 seconds, low transaction costs and scalability, etc. So all those things really resonated with me. Not beating around the bush, you know, there was the excitement of the money.
Sure.
I mean, you know, Bitcoin had grown so hugely, and at that time, I saw that there could be considerable return on investment. So they were really my main reasons.
Interesting. So most of the people I know who are skeptical of some of the core ideas behind Bitcoin generally become no coiners or skeptics. There'll be people who are sort of like, it's not for me. In fact, I'm actually kind of against it. And yeah. Kind of what I'm hearing you say is, these are the problems I had with it, so I looked for a different cryptocurrency project that had differences along those lines.
I was looking for something that resonated as credible. Uh-huh. I was really pragmatic about it. I took a long time to make a decision, and it was the only one that really stood out. And I'm more confident today than I was then. I was quite hesitant even in the beginning because it was such a unnatural investment for me, because it certainly wasn't traditional. And I know that obviously we as a community get a lot of heat for being involved, being holders of XRP.
You know, one of the things you said when I was asking you to come do this interview is that you didn't want to defend Ripple. I think that's a fair position. But I want to ask you from a sort of more zoomed out philosophical level. I think that a lot of people's problem with Ripple is that it breaks some of the dominant metaphors in cryptocurrency on several levels, like the deep involvement of a company that in some ways the currency is built on top of this company. That rubs people the wrong way. The fact that it takes the idea of decentralization as put forth by Satoshi and, in my opinion, kind of scales it back a little bit. It takes the basic ideas, but it's really like more controlled. It's more like traditional banking. At a certain level, do you feel like it makes sense to even compare Bitcoin and Ripple, or should these almost be filed under different cabinets in the office?
Well, you have Ripple, you have Ripple, the company, and you have obviously XRP, the cryptocurrency, the digital asset.
Yeah.
You know, Ripple is centralized. It's a private company. XRP, in my opinion, is not.
Right.
So, you know, it is different. I mean, I sort of looked at it from a different perspective. What is cryptocurrency? How is it evolving? I mean, I just feel that actually what's happened is that, from Satoshi's original white paper, cryptocurrency or blockchain is evolving. This is just a different angle. It is a different way to do it.
Yeah.
And in many respects, again, that's why it resonated with me, because it was something that really aimed at use case and something that I saw very valid. Maybe because I do live overseas and I do a lot of wire transfers, and our companies do, it hit home with me that it just takes so long to get money cross-border. And as Brad points out in many of his interviews, it's quicker to jump on a plane and hand deliver the money, which makes absolutely no sense. So I see it from a whole different view.
Sure.
I mean, there's cryptocurrency, and there's something that potentially can change the way the world and money works. Now, there is obviously the Bitcoin view that in many respects, that's P2P. We don't need banks. I believe that banks will evolve and change over the next decade, but I don't believe they will disappear.
I mean, in some ways, the way that you position Ripple is a more traditional investment, insofar as Ripple has a spokesperson and a CEO, and there's people behind it. Whereas you said, the Satoshi myth is kind of about the lack of leadership and the void left behind. I had a similar feeling about Ripple when I first got into crypto in terms of its potential. Like, I was like, oh, I get that. It's like a thing banks can use. Okay, I get all that. And the part where I started to kind of lose the thread a little bit, and I'm wondering where you come in on this stuff, was when I realized that they were, and this is not unique to Ripple, you could level this against half of the cryptocurrencies out there. They would sort of say like, oh, we have a deal with Amex. Well, it's actually a pilot program. Well, it's actually, Amex doesn't know about it. But that this kind of like idea that they were selling the vision of it and acting like it was already happening when it wasn't totally already happening. And many of these things are not totally happening. But I feel like something about that moment fractured the crypto community into people who were defending Ripple and people who are against Ripple. And I don't think any community has been quite so divisive. When did you start feeling like that was like seeping in? Like, how far into your Ripple journey did you start feeling the friction?
I think actually just before Swell, the conference. So when was that? September, October last year.
Yeah, kind of right before the big bull run.
Yeah, it was. And so Swell was announced, and there were the price went up for XRP. A lot of people were waiting for a huge announcement. But that was when I believe that maybe almost Ripple felt that they had to keep announcing partnerships to feed the fire and fuel the fire of cryptocurrency.
Right.
You know, I mean, I totally understood Swell. I thought it was a fantastic conference. It was about gaining relationships. And obviously after Swell, the price went down and it sort of settled a bit. So, I mean, I did like to hear about the partnerships, because it does sort of set the tone that Ripple is working with X Bank. In my opinion, the next step to that on these pilots is the implementation of XRapid. So it's connectivity, I suppose, for me.
So the big bull run happened. Ripple went from 50 cents to a dollar-ish, all the way up close to $3, I think, at one point.
I think we nearly hit, on some exchanges, nearly hit $4.
I'm assuming that that was a profitable run for you. But beyond...
It was a good Christmas.
I remember on the show, actually, Jay and I talked about it. We were like, okay, well, people have exhausted all the coins on Coinbase. What's another thing that is easy to find on the internet? Like, you'd almost at that point Google, like, what crypto should I buy? And Ripple would be pop up. And so there's like this whole new wave of people coming in who were buying Ripple, many of them in positions above a dollar, and getting injected. So what was it like as a long-term Ripple holder to have this new wave of Ripple people coming in?
Well, to be honest with you, I sort of had that mad scientist feeling, because I truly believed in it before the bull run.
Yeah.
I was a bit concerned, to be honest with you, because as it started happening, the press got hold of it, the media got hold of it, and it really just escalated it so quickly. For me, it was too quick.
Brian Kelly was not your friend during this period, shall I?
It pushed on so quickly. The concern was obviously that it was going to exhaust itself, and it did. Yeah. I mean, there were two things that really ended up happening, which was Coinbase sent out their notice that they're not looking at any other cryptocurrencies.
And they also sent out kind of a blanket message that was like, here are the kinds of coins we could consider. And you're like, huh, seems like they're saying not Ripple.
That was exactly how we read into it. The other thing was, I think it was about 2 weeks later, CoinMarketCap took off the South Korean pairs. Or prices, and that dropped the market completely. So we had these two elements that really took the bottom out of the price. So in many respects, it did stabilize and went to in my opinion, went back to normal. But what it created was this huge FUD, if that's what you want to call it, left us exposed in many respects. And then you had the talk of the flippening, which was obviously the potential. I think at one stage we went above Ethereum, and then, you know, I didn't think we were going to overtake Bitcoin at that time. But it really obviously got the backup of some big Bitcoin maximalists, if that's what you want to call it. And obviously Twitter being such a big forum, there was this huge attack that came out of nowhere. So you had these big guys with massive following on Twitter, and they went for it. And whereas the XR community had spent a long time really informing people, so we were really just guys and girls out there informing, you know, new members or anybody else that wanted to look at XRP about what it does, correcting misinformation, and then suddenly we were being attacked from every angle, you know, and it really went from there. So I think actually the Swell conference and the bull run were the two main elements when it came to where we sort of sit today and why maybe we've are perceived as sort of a swarm of a gang or whatever you want to call it.
I come back to sports metaphors a lot. Like, it felt like that moment when Ripple passed Ethereum, you became the Yankees or the Chelsea. of the league, mm-hmm. and it became fashionable to dislike Ripple. And I think we take the piss out of enough currencies that we can't be like considered Ripple skeptics particularly. I don't think we discriminate, but one of the things that came up in a lot of the discussions, right, that I actually think we taped a show the night that Ripple passed Ethereum and became number two, was I believe at that juncture, Brad Garlinghouse became on paper somewhere around $3. He became on paper one of the richest people in the world, like maybe number two or number three in the richest people in the world with his Ripple stash.
Was it Brad or was it Chris?
Now Larson. I think you're right. I think it was Chris Larson. But like everyone was in the top 100. Jed Michaela, like a bunch of people became in the 100 richest people in the world at that
they
moment.
They were. They definitely were.
And
yeah, I didn't think that helped.
Well, I mean, I'm not mad. It's not that I think the other people in the 100 richest people in the world are somehow admirable and Ripple people aren't. But it became a little bit of a question for me. If they've got a few pilot programs going for Ripple and they are already in the 10 richest people in the world, what is the incentive then to follow through on this vision? If this has been enough to make you one of the biggest companies in the world on paper, when Apple came to that point, they were had computers and the iPhone on the market. They had done all of this stuff. And it felt a little bit like Ripple got there many years too early.
I think the proof was in the pudding. You know, they've really upped their game and continued to expand. One thing I've always loved about Ripple is the fact that they have, in my opinion, have always followed through. Trust and integrity has been a huge part of why I invested into XRP. I mean, there was a lot of hype, you know, and to be honest with you, I think in the community, we didn't particularly buy into any of the hype. We just knew that potentially the price could go down and it would be business as usual.
Why do you think that Ripple has a bad reputation on Twitter as a community for ganging up on people who criticize Ripple, or generally kind of like taking the attitude of us versus them?
Well, to be honest with you, I think we've been provoked in many respects. As I said, when I think mid-2017, a lot of what we did on Twitter was educating people, new people. And we used to have general discussions between ourselves on Twitter openly about what XRP is. And, you know, and it was all very, very positive. The bull run came and we were being attacked in every single thread. I mean, you couldn't have a conversation with anybody without being called names and blah, blah, blah. So really from it evolved into a sort of trying to educate misinformation. So you would have people sort of jumping in and saying something and you would have to correct them.
Yeah.
And then it would turn into this fight and sort of name calling. And that's not really our style. Then you have these big Twitter guys out there really putting out some bad press, should we say, on Ripple and XRP. And I felt that was a vested interest, sort of biased position they took. So obviously if XRP goes up, it could cause them a problem for their Bitcoin holding. There was a lot of that going on. And so it evolved. And, you know, there was this new phase of XRP people, community, that got involved. And I think the sort of main guys and girls in the XRP community that have been in for a long time have tried their hardest to say, look, you don't react, we're not into name calling and any of that sort of stuff, you know, but we have sort of been forced or grouped together. I mean, I remember I was at Consensus Invest in New York in, you know, November 2017. It was my first conference, and you know, you wander around and people ask you who you are and what you do, and anytime I mentioned that I was invested in XRP, I was, you know, laughed at. And you think, oh, okay, this is a whole different world for me. I think in many respects, there's this sort of holding on Bitcoin and the people behind it, and they really don't want to see XRP succeed. You know, we've had this situation also. We mentioned Laura. We've had another matter. I think we were with Ryan Selkis. There's been a bit of back and forth with Ryan and Brad last week.
I had my bag of popcorn already popped.
Yeah. And you know what? It would look, whatever. I mean, the reality of the situation is they had a back and forth. Then I believe that Ryan's Twitter account was taken down, and it was presumed, or it was, I think Ryan had presumed that it was done by an XRP fan with the skills to do that, or a group of XRP fans reporting him or reporting his account, and so that it was taken down. However, when he came back on to Twitter with his personal account, you know, you had the likes of Tiffany Hayden, Nick and David really rallied around, and within an hour, his account was back up. I don't know if you saw the interview at Consensus with Ryan.
I did not, actually.
Which was quite interesting. So, okay, so, you know, you think all is good. We obviously rallied around after his account was taken down on Twitter and said, look, these sort of, if it was an XRP fan, these sorts of things, or enthusiast, these sorts of attacks are just not welcome. The Consensus Invest interview was quite interesting. I think the topic came on to scams, and I can't remember word for word what Ryan said, but his instant reply was something along the lines of Ripple and a cheeky little wink. And you think, well, okay, we're obviously being provoked. We take a lot of attacks on a daily basis. But reality, I think it's just a phase, because it does get rather boring having to repeat yourself. I mean,
the way it comes across is, I'm not like, I'm no Ryan Selkis. I'm not well known in crypto or anything, but I notice that I can just mention Ripple on Twitter and people will appear. And it's the same thing with this show. Yeah. Like, we've made fun of lots of coins on the show, but there's something about Ripple that the people just sort of show up. Like, what you describe as informing people, there's a weird, like, in America it would be the Jehovah's Witnesses. I don't know in England who it would be, but it's like aggressive, like knock on your door kind of inform you, too. You know? And I wonder if part of what makes me think that Ripple is a scam is that people are so eager to tell you it's not. Like, I'm a fan of Jackson Palmer, who the creator of Dogecoin. And he has like a thing that's called like, Are We Decentralized Yet? Which basically lists what percentage of the total coin volume is in the top X accounts. I don't want to like quote numbers because I'm going to be wrong. But it shows Ripple as much more centralized than say Bitcoin, it viewed through this lens. And I understand, I would guess that you probably would say, well, that's kind of a manipulative lens to see it through, and that's not really what Ripple is all about, blah, blah, blah. Fine, I agree with that. The fact that Jackson Palmer, who's like a crypto veteran, is like, wants to take that site down because the amount of like weird attention it brings him, there does seem to be some organized behind the scenes effort on the part of Ripple. And you're telling me it's not bots, but I've never seen people who are able to organize to appear people to comment in this kind of a way. Like, we have comment threads on that episode of Coin Talk that are like 10 or 15 people involved. We're not even that big a show. Like, a lot of the people who were commenting didn't seem to have listened to the show either. That was what made me like suspicious. And someone made a graph that showed like all the Twitter accounts that had responded to Ryan Selkis after the Laurishin thing. And it was like, it's some of the people just pop up all over the place. Like, one of the people I was hoping to get on the show who said that he wouldn't be able to do it is XRP Trump. I think his was like in the word cloud. He was the biggest.
Yeah.
And like XRP Trump has interacted with me. It's interacted with Ryan Selkis. Are these people who just have a lot of free time who are sitting around all day? Like, I have got to tell people what's wrong about their impression of Ripple.
I don't think it's that. I think it's, enthusiasts. I mean, obviously invested, but also enthusiastic about it. It's a tough one. You know, in reality, I suppose maybe we're being looked at in a bad light at the moment. There's a timeline to this. There's a history behind it. you know, it's not organized. I think there's, yes, there's right. obviously a lot of XRP fans, enthusiasts. We've, in many respects, I believe, to a degree, we've been cornered or been put in our corner. You know, we're the banker's coin. I suppose they would love to throw at us on a daily basis. And we went into XRP. I think many people went in for some of the similar reasons as I did. And it was because we believed in it. And then we sort of went on Twitter and then we just got attacked on a daily basis. I mean, I could go onto Twitter now and I could start a conversation and with 5 seconds, I would have somebody jumping in saying, well, I wouldn't even want to repeat, but you can imagine.
I think part of what I get is Bitcoin is more ideological to me. So I get that people have more religious dedication to it. Part of what I think is hard to read about the Ripple community is that the Ripple community is like passionate about overseas transfers, which anarchism is a different ideological drive than low fee bank transfers. I'm surprised that you take it so personally that people are bagging on Ripple. Is it more than an investment for you?
For me, it's definitely more than an investment. I think it's not just even so much that it's, you know, low fee transactions. As I said, I looked at Bitcoin and, you know, what the approach is to obviously do away with the banks. My view on it was that it actually changed Ripple XRP changes the fabric of finance. It isn't as simple as it's just a cross-border transaction with a lower fee. That changes everything from business. You know, everybody banks. So at the end of the day, that is inclusive of everything personally and, you know, from a corporate level. It changes absolutely everything. And I suppose Bitcoiners would say exactly the same thing. It's just that one includes banks and financial institutions and the other doesn't, I suppose. But in many respects, it's the same.
I actually find your case compelling, like as an investment case. Like I'm like, I see what he's saying. Like I'm a Monero fan. I like sort of in the same way that you built your hypothesis. I understand the hypothesis of privacy coins, but I don't have as much of an urge. Like when someone's like Monero, what is that? The money laundering coin? I'm not like, hey man, come on. This is actually used for I don't have quite the same urge to defend it. And maybe that's just like differences in personality, et cetera. The thing is, to me, the defensiveness almost makes it seem more sinister. Like the fact that people are arguing about me is part of the reason why I'm suspicious of Ripple. If it was just a banking coin, it was like I don't find, like I live in New York, even when people hated the banks here, you know, in the worst part of the financial crash, I didn't feel like bankers were coming up to me and like defending their positions and being like, no, banking's important, you know?
Well, you made a really good point. I think it was either yourself or Jay, you entered into the conversation that we were sort of likened to MLS fans.
That was Jay.
Yeah, Jay, right. So
Jay has pissed off lots of different constituencies over time, so he's always got a good
it's a broad
good metaphor for people who are angry at him.
Well, it was an interesting... I mean, I did a bit of research. I like my football.
I was going to say, are the British even aware that the MLS exists?
We are, because you keep taking all of our stars.
I was going to say, where would stars in their late 30s go if there wasn't the MLS? They'd have to retire.
Well, I'm a big Manchester United fan, and you've just taken Zlatan Ibrahimovic, so I'm
you're welcome.
I'm upset.
You're welcome.
But I mean, look, I did a bit of research on the MLS, and it's something that sort of grew out of nothing in 1996. They had whatever 10 teams, and then you had these big stars coming in. What these guys brought to the MLS was huge. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, when I sort of thought about what you guys were discussing, I think you've got MLS fans that believe in this, what was a project, is growing into something huge and will and has the potential to be something globally massive. I thought to myself, okay, well, look, if I put Ripple where, let's call them the MLS, and then we are the fans,
And that makes La Liga, Bitcoin, and the Premier League Ethereum?
Exactly. So I think you can sort of say that that's where we stand as a community as well. We didn't really find our place in, let's say, the Bitcoin community, because we didn't believe in Bitcoin. So we were trying to find what made sense to us. And I think the use case for XRP was what fit. And, you know, we, like the MLS fans, believe that it will be the biggest thing in the next, you know, 3 to 5 years, 10 years, let's say.
Let me ask you, as someone who believes in this, I want to understand, like, how I could become a Ripple maximalist. So I'm going to tell you the things that are keeping me from becoming a Ripple maximalist. The hardest thing for me to wrap my head around is the idea of no mining. Like, one of the things that makes me believe in the Bitcoin system is that a bunch of people started mining it even when it was worth almost nothing. And there was all of these different constituencies that had to come together to imbue it with value. And when I compare that model to a model in which all the coins just show up and it's like, hey, who wants to buy these and trade them? And additionally, where a bunch of the Bitcoins are sitting in the digital earth, but a bunch of the Ripple, as I understand it, are sitting in an account to be used to, like, attract partners and to do various other business. Does that give you any pause? Or like, how do you think about that?
No, I mean, to be honest with you, the mining side of it, to be honest, I couldn't quite, I mean, I understood it, but I saw some value in it, but I really didn't see huge value in it.
Interesting.
You know, maybe I was a bit later to the game, but it really didn't hold much value. It made more sense to me. It was on a consensus basis without proof of work or mining. And, you know, I mean, obviously there's a big thing about obviously the wasted electricity. Sure. That goes into all of that. I mean, yes, that absolutely makes sense. But no, realistically, it resonated with me maybe because it was closer to the current financial system. In many respects, I think that XRP is there to better the current financial system, not take it over.
Okay, so this store of Ripple that's sitting there, that's owned, I guess, by the Ripple company?
Yes.
And what I'm wondering is, what is the objective for all of that Ripple that's still out there, in your opinion?
I mean, they were, when the founders got together and I suppose created it, Ripple were in many respects gifted a lot of XRP. They own the majority of XRP. Then you've got others joining in. I mean, the Arrington fund owns, well, it was a $100 million fund.
Yep.
Number one, I did like the fact that Ripple owned quite a lot of XRP because it incentivized them to make a success mm-hmm. of it. They, in my mind, had skin in the game. But I suppose I looked at it and thought, well, it's an incentive program. You know, that for me makes sense. They're utilizing it to expand Ripple and their partnerships and evolving business. But I also believe that once they have XCurrent and the pilots in place, the connectivity between XCurrent and XRapid is the next step. So enter the XRP use case.
As someone who believes in XRP and Ripple, what do you think is the biggest stumbling block is potentially in the road coming up for Ripple? And what do you think the systems that currency like Ripple would deal with something like that?
Well, I think it's the same for most currencies, cryptocurrencies, but I think obviously regulation is a hot
sure.
topic. You know, that was one of my big reasons also that Ripple worked close with regulators. I mean, Ryan Zagoni and Ben Lawski are with Ripple. I mean, I think it's a huge stumbling block to a degree, but it's one that everybody has to counter. They hopefully are leading the way. We'll have to see what happens with the SEC, although the news that we've heard so far has been quite positive. I think that was one thing that has been on everybody's mind, whether XRP is a security or it's not
right.
a security. I mean, Ethereum obviously been going through the same
sure.
thing. But regulation is probably my one concern, because it's such a minefield in so many different jurisdictions across the world. It will be interesting to see where Ripple stands and XRP stands in, let's say, 2 years' time.
I'm also interested, as someone who sees cryptocurrencies as much as entertainment, as technology, I'm glad that Ripple's out there. I'm glad that all of these things are being tried so that we can not argue about what would happen, but see what happens. Before we go, are there any other projects out there that are exciting you? Or anything else you're filling up your bag with? What's new for you? Are you a dedicated Rippler?
I'm majority XRP, but I quite like the Cardano project as well.
Keeping it in the family?
Yeah.
Stellar? No Stellar or no Stellar?
No, I couldn't, could I? I just couldn't.
Okay, there's a schism.
A bit of Stellar.
I knew there'd be something.
I've got a mixed bag, but I mean, I am majority. I've got a bit of ELF in there, Litecoin, Bitcoin Cash, but I suppose they would be just for interesting punts, really. Let's see how it goes. Nothing comes close to my XRP, really, truly.
Tell people what your Twitter handle is if they want to follow you.
It's Kieran M.L. Kelly, KIERAN M.L. Kelly.
And what's one Ripple community member on Twitter that you'd recommend for people who would like to see the positive side of Ripple rather than the negative one?
You'll get me in trouble. I would say, to be honest with you, the main, I'd say Tiffany Hayden has been such a big advocate and full of knowledge. I mean, she's incredible. XRP Trump has been great. And then Hodor is fantastic. His blogs that are weekly that come out are incredible.
Thank you so much for this. I really appreciate it.
I really appreciate you having me on. Thank you so much.
This episode of Coin Talk was taped Tuesday, May 22nd at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The Bitcoin price index was $8,214.
Hey, thanks for listening to Coin Talk. I'm Aaron Lammer. My co-host is Jay Kang. Our editor is James Nicholson. Our partner in all this is Medium. You can get in touch, hi@cointalk.show. Send us a question, send us a comment. Tell us you want to sponsor the show. That would make me happy. Maybe you have a question about the Bitcoin Standard, which is the subject of our book club, which will be the next episode. Read through chapter 7. Sorry, that was supposed to come out before this show, but Jay and I are really slow readers. We have to read aloud to each other. So see you soon.